He said he couldn't ride a cop who was half man, half plant, because he'd never been a shrub.
So how did you write for the Vine?
A young woman asked. She was braless and spilling out of her tank top, so it took all of Ian's willpower to respond to her face and not to her boobs. By always keeping my mortgage and credit card bills next to my keyboard, he told her boobs. He'd never had much willpower. How do you write Clint Straker? Someone else called out. I imagine the man I wish I was, living the life of adventure I wish I had. That answer was only half true. He wanted to be as self-confident, resourceful, and attractive to women as Straker was. But he didn't want to face the danger, violence, or the fate of the world responsibility that his hero regularly took in stride. Once was enough for Ian. But at least he survived the experience and got a New York Times best-selling novel out of it. He fielded a few more questions, signed 100 new books along with 50 of his old titles, and an hour later he stepped outside, where Gwen, his new author escort, was sucking on an e-cigarette like it was a baby bottle. She was a graduate student in the University of Washington English department who ferried novelists around town so she could pitch them her book, a Civil War allegory set on a planet of unicorns, zebras, and horses. She took the cigarette out of her mouth and exhaled some mist. "Shall I take you back to your hotel?" "No, thank you. It's so nice out that I think I'll walk," Ian said. "See you tomorrow at the mystery bookstore." "Would you like to meet early for coffee?" she asked. "I can show you my first chapter. Clint Straker shares more in common with unicorns than you might think." "I'm sure you're right," he said. "Maybe another time." Gwen forced a smile, got into her Prius, and drove off. He didn't really want to schlep a mile back to his hotel, but it was better than being a captive audience for Gwen's story about unicorns at war with the horses that were enslaving zebras. "Why are you so fucking polite?" a familiar female voice asked. "Tell her where to stick her unicorn. That's what Clint Straker would do." Ian smiled as Margot stepped out of the shadows. She hadn't changed a bit. She was in her late 20s, thin and wiry, with short-cropped, crow-black hair that looked like she'd trimmed it herself with a box cutter. She wore a faded t-shirt, torn jeans, and Doc Martens. "I'm not Clint Straker," he said. "You could have fooled me," Margot said. Ian gave her a hug and she squeezed him tight. "I'm glad you came." "What else did I have to do? My dog-sitting business has dried up, all because of one negative Yelp review." "You left the dogs alone with a pile of food, a bucket of water, and a corpse impaled with a fireplace poker." That was his fault, too. "One time," Margot said. "How often is that likely to happen?" Ian laughed and gestured to the bookstore. "Why didn't you come for the reading and the Q&A?
"Living it was enough. I'm still suffering from PTSD.
"Really?"
Ian said. "No, I'm fine. What we went through forced me to get my shit together. I'm focusing entirely on my music now," she said. "I'm writing songs. I play 3 nights a week at a steakhouse here in town. And I do a lot of weddings, bar mitzvahs, that kind of thing."
"That's how Rihanna started," Ian said.
"I have a hard time picturing Rihanna singing Hava Nagila."
"I have a hard time picturing you singing Hava Nagila."
Two men in crisp business suits and wearing earpieces with wires that ran down under their starched collars approached them from either side. They had faces so rigid that they either were suffering from terminal constipation or were federal agents.
"Mr. Ludlow," the first man said. "Miss French, can you please come with us?" the second man said.
Ian and Margot shared a look. This couldn't be good.
The two men herded them to a limousine parked on the corner. The first man opened the back door and motioned for them to go inside. Margot glanced at Ian for reassurance.
"He said, please," Ian said. "That's a good sign."
"And it's a limo, not a hearse.
So there's no reason to worry."
Ian took a deep breath and got in.